If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Have they already written the obituary for that guy that's going to jump out of the airplane?
I don't think they might have written it. They haven't published it yet.
They haven't posted it yet. I think they can go ahead and get that in the queue, as they say. Yeah. Do that story again, Bob. I don't think
so,
I heard it right.
Luke Akins, who has 18,000 jumps to his name.
As a skydiver.
As a skydiver with a parachute. Well, he will be jumping without a parachute.
Mm-hmm.
25,000 feet. He will plunge toward the earth for 2 minutes and then land, ideally safely, in a big net that is support. I'm looking at a picture of it. It's supported by a crane. The net is about 200 feet above the ground. I mean, it's going to be on TV tonight.
His last words were, "Hey, honey, watch this," or "Hold my beer," two of the things you often hear from guys before they die.
This is true, and he said...
It's going to be on TV?
It'll be on TV. I think it's Fox. But he told ABC, "I have a wife and son, and I plan on being here a long time." So mm-hmm. It's a motivation to get to the ground in one piece.
And by that, I mean 2 minutes. So that's like when you fly, you're at 30,000 feet. This guy's at 25,000 feet. So this is like looking out the window of an airliner and going, I think I'll just, strap the money to my body and head out the door now and hit a net. Okay. Okay. Well, listen, I hope he lives and so on and so forth.
He's not a coyote as far as we know. I mean, Wile E.
Exactly.
Coyote does have that
exactly.
bit of a sound to it.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. Keep us posted on that. Bob Kessler. In the WGN newsroom, this is John Williams. Happy Saturday to you. Isn't this a great song? I mentioned before the news that I was thinking about
Stairway from my window.
My fantasy Lollapalooza, with one caveat.
Stairway from my back door.
That all of the songs and performers had to be
disconnect the telephone
previous to my senior year in high school. My senior year in high school, 1977. Who are the songs that I'd have access to? Is awesome. So I said, okay, I went to Billboard's Top 100 and I looked at the top songs for 1977. And I got the list, and then I constructed two main stages with two big acts, like a Rod Stewart. He gets to do one of them. And then I had some side stages for some of the lesser acts. And then I got angry at 1977 for reasons I'll explain in a minute. I have a friend who's really into music. In fact, he's in a really good band around town. And I said, hey, Eric, I'm making my fantasy Lollapalooza band list, but it has to be 1977, so all of the music and performers have to be pre-77. Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Wonder, Leo Sayer. What's your fantasy Lollapalooza band list? I need two stages, main, and two side stages. And he wrote back, main stages, Wings, Pink Floyd, side stage, Humble Pie, The Clash. Then he wrote, Leo Sayer, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, and then 5 exclamation points, and then a bunch of letters that include W, T, U, I, and F. And I'm not exactly sure how that sentence deconstructs, but I think I know what he was saying. I wrote back, listening to this music makes me feel like dancing. You listen to Leo Sayer, you will feel like dancing. Tell me that it doesn't make you smile. I'm going to do a segment on my show today. You can link to it on Facebook. He wrote back, listening to that song makes me feel like hurling. You might as well have picked a Babs song. I wrote 1977. Evergreen was a number one hit that year. It was bigger than The Clash. And then he wrote, well, Rod Stewart and the Bee Gees were popular. And I said, hey, my main stage would include Rod Stewart. The Bee Gees will be on a side stage. I know that's going to hurt their feelings. And then this is where I got mad at my friend Eric. He wrote, I was working a blue-collar job that year, and we listened to the radio a lot. My response was, what does that mean? That validates your choices more than mine? I was a senior in high school, tortured and in love that year. This music mattered to me. And finally, he wrote, that doesn't mean it makes it any good just because it sold a billion copies.
Ow.
So, I'm just going to go through my list here, Bob. By the way, Eric, are you there?
I am here, John.
Okay, that's the guy I was trading those text messages. This is my former friend, Eric Carafa. Hi, Eric.
And I stand by my statements, too, my declarative statements.
Let me just run through my main stages then, and then I'll ask you to amend yours maybe. So we've got Rod Stewart on one main stage. Fair enough. I'm going to put this guy. That was a number one hit for Stevie Wonder in 1977. He should headline. Then we'll do, oh, I don't know.
My mind is Tiffany twisted. She got the Mercedes Benz.
Eagles would definitely headline one night. And then, I mean, 1977, we'd have to give these guys the stage. Awesome. Don't you just love a little Fleetwood Mac?
Players only love you when they're playing.
I don't think you and I disagree on that too much, do we, Eric?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Fleetwood Mac, to this day, I could listen to Rumors, you know, three or four times a week. It's a fabulous record. It's a classic record. The Eagles, I'm not sure I would agree with that. I think I might have put them on a side stage in 1977.
Okay.
But Stevie Wonder, absolutely. I saw Stevie Wonder a couple of years ago, and I've seen, I don't know, you know, 1,000 shows in my life. That was one of the best. That was top five of any show I've ever seen.
I was thinking Stevie Wonder and Rod Stewart could still headline. I mean,
Stevie Wonder could, Rod Stewart, I don't think could. He didn't have the same sort of gravitas that he had back in 1977.
Okay, I'm going to play for you my side stages. I've only got three songs here for you, although I have several other bands that will be invited, but one of them will have to include... You're smiling, aren't you?
It sounds like actually like he's on helium.
You put a spell on me, right where you want me to be. You make me feel like dancing.
Yeah, for those of you who weren't born past a certain point, we should point out that the main singer there does have testicles, and that's hard to believe. But what a fun song. So I don't know that he could fill the whole set that I want him to, but I'm definitely going to invite Leo Sayer, if nothing else, to walk on stage and do that song. Maybe he could just come out after or sometime during. Shall we invite Manfred Mann?
To a that side stage, baby.
All of these songs, number one, the year I graduated from high school. And then... how about this one for just one more of my side stages? Because I think we need to be as diverse as we can. You know, disco was a big deal in 77, so, or it was coming. Can't you just see everybody dancing to this and bobbing? Those with long pants will have flares on the bottom down there. And then I also thought this, Eric, tell me if you agree. This is John Williams, by the way. My friend Eric Karoff is on the phone, and we're talking a little bit about my fantasy 1977 Lollapalooza. And some of these bands I think I did throw in there just to annoy you, but I also think, how am I doing, by the way?
You're doing a fine job, by the way.
But that's 1977. So 10 years previous, I mean, like if you were at 2016 Lollapalooza, you might still be interested in somebody that broke through in 2006. If that were the case, if you went back 10 years in 1977, then you would definitely, to a side stage, and this isn't the nostalgia stage. I mean, they're still relevant.
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
Actually, I'm not sure they're still relevant, but how much fun would this be? They'd all still be there. If I could just stroll from Fleetwood Mac and then go over and there's the Monkees playing and then holy cow, over there is, I don't know, somebody else. That would be really fun.
That would be a lot of fun, especially now with the Monkees. And again, I'm a big Monkees fan. They were part of certainly my experience growing up. But if we're talking about 1977, let's not sort of confuse the fact that they would not be relevant in 1977, but it would be fun to see. To me, it would be a nostalgia.
Yeah, relevance may be the wrong word, but they'd still be good enough, right?
They would be good enough, and they'd be fun. Take them for what they were.
Joan, you're on WGN. Thanks for calling. Who is it your – what's the year, and what's your fantasy Lollapalooza look like?
Well, I'm not going to go through the whole fantasy, but, John, you've got to include Styx.
Oh, my gosh. Boy, and local, too. They could just drive right up.
You got that right. My God, you got to include them.
Yeah, yeah.
But not the sticks we have now. Cannot be any other sticks without Dennis DeYoung.
No, I think, listen, thank you for the phone call. That might be, boy, I hate to push anybody off my main stage, but they were as big as anybody back then, right, EK? That would be good.
I don't think they had reached the apex of their popularity yet in 1977. I don't think.
Well, they didn't have any number one hits that year. In fact, can I just play one more for you? This is why I got mad. So I go back and look at all of the number one songs of 1977. Those are the ones I'm featuring here. Do you know what the number one song was in 1977? And it was number one from October 14th. Think about this. October 14th to December 24th. So half of October, all of November, and almost all of December 1977. What was the number one song? Do you remember what it was?
Was it a Rod Stewart song?
No.
You light up my life.
Was that Debbie Gibson?
It's the Gibster.
Oh my God, the Gibber.
No, it's close. It's Debbie Boone.
Like Debbie Boone, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. One and the same.
I challenge you to go back, listen to that song, and explain how that was number one for more than 35 minutes. That's amazing. It was number one
It's amazing how horrible it is.
Really? No kidding. I even think back then we knew it wasn't that good, but I don't know if everybody had unplugged everybody else's guitars and nobody else was putting something out. It was just so strange. Okay, so give me... amend your stages in any way you choose to then, Eric. Are you going to stay with the ones you sent me? Your fantasy Lollapalooza is going to stay the same?
My fantasy, what did I say? I said the Clash on the side stage.
You've got Wings. Wings would be good. That would be fun. Pink Floyd would be awesome. Imagine their laser light show.
Right. And so those are my two main stages in 1977. And I said, the Clash
and
on
Humble
the side
Pie.
Stage and Humble Pie on the side stage.
And now you have agreed to come over and watch Leo Serre with me.
Absolutely, positively, 100%, not a freaking chance, John. Would never happen.
It's my former friend, never Eric Carafa. All right, Eric, I'm hanging up on you. Goodbye now.
Goodbye, John. Nice chatting.
Yeah, it was, actually. And if you want to chime in, give me the... and any thoughts you have along those lines. But, you know, if you're of a certain age, and actually if you're 34 or 64, you would still have those songs that were so important to you back then. And the bands, and you know, it's not like there wasn't Woodstock pre-Lollapalooza, but the point is you didn't have multiple stages going on at once. So that's sort of like all of your eggs in one basket at the same time, and that sounds like fun. It's 122. I'm John, and this is WGN. Bob, I'm older than you. Griff, I'm a lot older than you. But I just wanted to say one other thing that I didn't mention to my friend Eric. He and I are in our mid-50s. And that is this, that when I do look back at the top songs of the year I graduated from high school, 1977, I'm like, holy cow, did we have terrible music to listen to? So we had Rod Stewart, and we had the Eagles, and we had Rumors, and we had Stevie Wonder. We had that. That was good. We had Styx, whatever.
You had Bowie. Some of
right,
the best Bowie
yeah.
at that
so,
time.
So that's all good. But I just looked at the number one Billboard song for each week of the year. And we had Mary McGregor, Torn Between Two Lovers, Barbra Streisand, Evergreen, ABBA, Dancing Queen, Alan O'Day, Undercover Angel. Nobody remembers that song, Undercover Angel, Midnight Gear. You remember that song?
No.
Sean Cassidy, Da Do Ron Ron. That's Da Do Ron Ron. Barry Manilow, Looks Like We Made It. Andy Gibbs, I Just Want to Be Your Everything. This is interesting. Then Best of My Love by the Emotions. And then after that, more Andy Gibbs, same song, I Just Want to Be Your Everything. As though people thought, oh, man, I'm missing that Andy Gibbs song. Put it back on the top of the charts, and we did.
They bought it for people as a present. They bought it for themselves.
Maybe that's it. And then October 15th to December 24th, Debbie Boone, You Light Up My Life. I don't know what we did to deserve that.
No Queen? I guess they never really had any number one singles. They had a lot of
Bohemian, what year did...
Bohemian Rhapsody was like 74, 75.
I don't think they had a number one. Now, there may be a lot of number twos out there that I didn't put on this list. I only went so far. But
number one was more about pop than rock.
Evidently. I mean, really, I don't know who. My mom was listening to this stuff. That's the sad thing. All right, we'll pause here. It's about 1:27, and I need to get to the news. We have a longer edition of the Mincing Rascals today because the gang has a lot to say about the speeches at the RNC and DNC. How many of you did this on Friday? Did you do this? You got up in the morning and you went, "Whew, it's all over." The Republicans had their week. The Democrats had their week. It ended Thursday night. Hillary made history. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen, but we at least don't have to get our stomachs in a knot about those conventions. We will about the debates and everything else that's going to happen between now and Election Day, but it did feel like a reprieve to me Friday morning. The gang reflects on all of that after the news. And that's around the corner here on WGN. Thank you, Bob. This is John Williams. After the 2 o'clock news, Bob, I want to talk to you more about our Teddy Roosevelt show coming up at the College of DuPage. I don't know if you noticed, but President Obama, in endorsing Hillary Clinton, gave the man in the arena speech, one of Teddy Roosevelt's most famous 60 seconds of speaking. He was using it to describe the woman in the arena, Hillary Clinton. Like her or not, that's not what it was about. I was just thrilled that he was referencing TR, because TR's done that speech for us and may well yet at our next show. Tickets and what's going on after 2 o'clock, I want you to hear that, and I'd really love it if you came to the show. You will enjoy it. I hope you'll enjoy this now. We post a podcast every Friday at WGNplus.com. We post it on my Facebook page where I'm King John 2. The Mincing Rascals are Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, and then from the Chicago Tribune, columnists and editorial writers Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie. I asked them to sort of just look back at the last 2 weeks, the last two conventions. And so in this partial replay of the podcast, Eric Zorn talks about the Democratic National Convention.
I think that it will set the standard for conventions for a long time going forward in terms of how well organized it was and how carefully orchestrated the presentations were. Yeah, there were some rough moments with the Bernie supporters trying to drown out Hillary Clinton and other speakers. But in terms of the choice of material and the speakers they chose and how well the speeches were delivered and so on, I mean, I thought that everything about it was really well done, just as a matter of political stagecraft. And these are shows.
Yeah.
So I would say that I haven't seen a convention run this smoothly in a long time.
Well, except for that, like, first 24 hours, right? I mean,
but that wasn't the convention not running smoothly. That was some external atmosphere. I mean, that was a problem, and that remains a problem for them. But the convention as a show, I thought, was just about flawless.
I thought that it was so coordinated, down to Barack Obama's tie matching Hillary's dress, the placement of signs. You're right, the lineup of speakers each night. I do agree with you on that, although I think we might be discounting the problems they had the first day. Kristen, what do you think?
Well, I have a strange perspective because I was actually at the Republican convention inside the arena. So, I mean, I think they both ran smoothly, and that's not a credit to either side. You know, they have professional people who come in and get the ball rolling and get these conventions to make sure that everyone's coming out on time and they have musicians. I thought it was a little strange to have Katy Perry singing. It just felt a little bit too show business. But I mean, the speakers, which we're going to talk about in a bit, many of them were really impressive.
I really expected to see Ronald Reagan at the Democrats' convention.
Because they kept stealing all of his material.
Or not stealing, but claiming in mm-hmm. many ways. I mean, and you know, it's not my observation. I've heard others say it, but it's so true that the Democrats have become this draped in flag, mourning in America sort of message holder, while the Republicans and Donald Trump are, you know, this country's going down the toilet sort of thing. I mean, I think that they brilliantly sort of co-opted the Ronald Reagan optimism.
Yeah, but
there's been a lot of talk that I've heard that this was very much like, in terms of tone and presentation, the 2004 Republican convention, that, you know, when George W. Bush was running for
which
the
they held, I think, right during the anniversary of the attack. in New York, right? It was right about that time.
I think that's right, yeah. And so, I mean, so, the implications of flag and country and optimism and patriotism. That was Rich Lowry of the of the National Review, the editor of the National Review, tweeted out during President Obama's speech, something like, you know, morning in America and sunshine and hope and optimism. This is our material.
Right.
And then
Wet really
our friend Wet Moser at Chicago Magazine tweeted back. He said, well, sorry, it just looked like you weren't using it anymore.
Like you were done with it. It got retweeted about four or
five times.
Well,
who changed more, the Republicans? Republicans or Democrats then?
I don't know. I don't think it's fair to say the Republicans. I think Donald Trump changed the message, and I think the Democrats saw an opening and took it.
Whatever that was that the RNC did, that was a Donald Trump show. That probably wasn't fair to Republicans in general in this country. Would you agree with that?
What wasn't fair?
It wasn't a fair reflection of who they are. I mean, they all had to just kind of hold their nose and watch five Trumps speak and say things that they didn't believe in. That was the Republican convention. Too bad for them.
Back-to-back speakers all day long for 4 days. So, I mean, there were war heroes. You know, Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, was a very powerful speaker. I wouldn't say that they didn't get, you know, of course there was red meat. There always is. I mean, there was a very strong Black Lives Matter speech at the Democratic convention that I don't know is necessarily reflective of the more middle-of-the-road Democrats. But all in all, I think Republicans, they got the message they wanted to hear, and Democrats did too.
Bradley Cooper's in trouble. Did you see that?
No, why?
The nonfiction book. I'm sure you interviewed him. The American Sniper,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, and then they made
him. Is it Chris Kyle?
Chris Kyle.
Yes.
Thank you.
Ding,
thank
ding,
you.
Ding, ding, ding.
Then Bradley Cooper stars in the movie, gets nominated for an award, and then he shows up at the Democratic convention, and he starts getting all this hate on Twitter from Republicans mm-hmm. who just assumed he was Chris Kyle style Republican because he played him in the movies.
Interesting. I did not see that.
Oh, wait. So the actor isn't the same as the person
right,
he
yeah,
portrays?
Apparently not, yeah.
How disillusioning.
All right. So here's my five speeches from the RNC and DNC ranked in reversed order. Number five, Hillary's was the fifth best. It was serviceable, but it wasn't really inspirational, particularly compared to three of the greatest speakers ever. Number four was Donald Trump's speech. If the object was to scare people into voting for him, that was a strong and, for some people, persuasive speech. Number three, Barack Obama's speech was just magnificent, but we've seen him do magnificent speeches before, and his wife's was even better. Michelle's concept of telling the story of the country through a mother's eyes and through her daughter's was just wonderful, and that when they aim low, when they go low, we go high line was hashtaggable. I thought Bill Clinton's speech was the very best theater, and the most valuable too. I met a girl in 1971, he said, and you go, holy cow, he's going to tell us this story.
Oh, this better be Hillary you're talking about.
Right.
Right.
Well, that was the thing. Yeah. I thought the speech was fearless that way. He said a lot of things that he knows Kristen McQuarrie is going to roll her eyes at, and he didn't care.
I just did.
You just kind of held on and went for this ride. I thought it was remarkable stagecraft, Kristen.
I don't like him. Hillary did the same thing. She's, you know, right off the bat, looked at Bill Clinton and said, you know, we've had our ups and downs. So they are, you know, just embracing the rocky road that they have had, and that it's a national story. But I don't like how all the cutaways to Bill Clinton during the convention or during different speakers. And he always just, you know what, he's a caricature. I don't like him. I didn't like his speech. I don't like all the attention focused on him.
Why? Because he cheated on her and that made this whole narrative seem false to you?
No, he's just inauthentic to me. And this is supposed to be her moment. All of the jokes about Bill and, like I said, the cutaways to him in the box, and he had his arm around his son-in-law at one point. It's like he knows he's on camera and he's just playing it up.
Wait a minute. So you're saying someone at a major party convention was inauthentic?
Yes, he's not.
Well, somebody else go. Give me your 3-2-1, or tell me what was the best and worst of the speeches then.
I've been noodling with my list here. I thought that the assignment was just the five best from the Democratic convention.
That's okay.
And as soon as you started talking about the Republican convention, I was trying to think which speeches there I thought were well done. And I thought Chris Christie's speech, I thought, was very strong. It really seemed to play very well in the hall.
Putting Hillary on trial, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like it did. Now, Kristen, you were there. Did it play well there?
Actually, it didn't. It was kind of cheesy, I thought.
Okay, but I thought the rest of them were way. I thought Giuliani was way over the top, and Trump was way over the top. Ted Cruz's speech, everyone focused on the disinclination to endorse Trump, but it was, I thought, a fairly well done elucidation of conservative principles up until that point. It all got lost in the controversy afterwards. But again, I thought, as I was reading along with these speeches, going, well, that's a pretty good speech. If you like that sort of thing, it's what the kind of thing you'll like.
My brother was on the floor for that, Eric. Christian, you were too. And he said they loved him coming out, and they loved him halfway through. And then it started to dawn on them, wait a minute, he's not saying the word. And then the crowd slowly turned. But he was, as you said, delineating Republican principles. He was their guy for a while.
Is that true, Chris? Is that your sense, too? Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, he was very warmly welcomed. Sometimes I liked his speech because he's not overly messaged, and he does kind of take risks. But, toward the end when he was wrapping up, yes, everyone started booing. You couldn't even hear him speak at the end because the booze were so overwhelming.
I will quickly give you my top six from the Democratic convention.
We haven't been already listening to that?
Number six, Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York.
Speech.
Very good. And five, Michelle Obama. Four, Hillary Clinton. Three, Joe Biden. Joe Biden brings it. He's a great convention speaker. Two is, I don't know how you say his first name, Kizer Khan.
Khan.
The father of Captain Humayun Khan, who was killed. Telling Trump, you have sacrificed nothing and no one, and you have not read the Constitution.
Can borrow my copy, right? Did he say that?
Oh, yeah. He took a copy out of his breast pocket.
It was not a prominent speech. It wasn't a long speech, but boy, did it pack a wallop. And number one is Obama. President Obama. I mean, yeah, you've heard him give better speeches, but he's great.
I don't have a list, but, I'm the sappiest among us, I think. And for me, I really think I really felt for the moment when Hillary Clinton joined Barack Obama on stage. The speech was great, and I had in the back of my mind that she might be there, might not. I hadn't thought too much of it, and then when she came out and she had that sort of elusive, genuine Hillary look, like she was really there and really joyful about it. I thought that was a very powerful moment. And aside from all of the speeches, which were great and involved a little more intellectual investment, I just thought that that hug and all of that was just a great.
The one with Barack on the stage, you mean?
Yeah, I really do.
I would agree with that. It was very, they really hugged each other.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was number one.
I thought they were
going to
do a gore kiss there for a second, right?
Somebody on Twitter said, it wasn't that long ago in our country's history that a black guy who embraced a white woman like that would be lynched.
That's not that clever. Come on now.
And really? It's not clever. I'm not saying it's clever. I'm just saying it's an actual point. That's true.
No one brought up Tim Kaine in his speech. God help him. How do you? But I think he's done very well. I mean, I really do. And I watched his entire Saturday speech when he was introduced. And
how did you stay awake? Just curious.
No, I thought I really liked it.
Oh, you liked it.
I really did.
I thought it was a little bit
Tim
dry.
The Tim Kaine speech.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Tim Kaine speech.
I thought it was funny in a way. I mean, you talk about that Admiral What's-His-Face, why am I here? I think he said as much. It's like he couldn't believe he was up on that stage either.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I apparently think a lot more of him than you guys do, but here's what he said that stuck with me and Will, and this is what I'm talking about with the political speech of the past 10 days. He, was at a school in Florida, and he's talking about the immigrants. He did the Spanish in and out. He said, how many of you here are naturalized citizens? How many here? Raise your hand. And they did, and a bunch of people cheered. And then he said, thank you for choosing us. That was such a powerful thing. It wasn't this American-centric, you're lucky we're taking you in. Instead, he turned with humility and said, thank you for choosing us.
Like a flight attendant on the way out of an airplane.
No. I thought it was brilliant.
We know you have many options.
Well, true.
We appreciate you.
No, I just thought there was a humility there. And if you guys don't agree, I'm just going to go home right now.
it's a sweet line. And
welcome back, Steve.
He may wear well, I think. It's too early to tell. A lot of things on social media. He's like a typical dad. He's like the guy who brings the snacks to the ball game and stuff.
This is a tiny little point, but I thought Hillary's speech was a little packaged, and that's just always going to be a problem for her. She has trouble connecting. And the first words out of her mouth when she came out and everybody kind of settled down, and as they were still cheering, though, she said, thank you for that introduction or that ovation or that welcome. And I thought it should be thank you for this. You're in the moment. It's happening now. You're not reading a speech. But she said, thank you for that welcome. And it just seems so the word that just jumped out
at me.
You know,
the same thing jumped out at me, John. I'm like, oh, this isn't going to go well. you know, she recovered, but you're right. It's like, oh, this is a rough start.
And my other thing was, Hillary, talk, don't yell. If you start to yell, if you start to do that thing you do, you'll lose us all. I thought the audience was giving her more than she was giving them. There were times where they were chanting, Hillary, Hillary. But she knew to read the speech and not. Bill would have known
to pause.
You know
what? They were yelling. They were chanting Hillary, Hillary because they were trying to drown out the Bernie protesters. That's what I was.
Oh, is that what was going on? Oh, okay.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
That's what I've heard too. They were. And it wasn't even clear what the Bernie protesters were saying, but as soon as they would start to chant, the Hillary people would start chanting Hillary.
They are just.
Time for them to
contempt.
Yeah,
I am so fed up with those people. I don't think they don't even know what they're protesting. I don't even think they're. I don't think they have an awareness of what's going on in the world.
Well, you may disagree if you're a Bernie supporter, but that's part of the mincing rascals. Steve Bertrand, Kristen McQuarrie, who is an editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune, and columnist Eric Zorn. You can hear that full podcast. We didn't even get to what happened to Rahm Emanuel. At the convention in that broadcast, but it's sure part of the podcast, and you can hear it at WGNplus.com. You can download it, too. We call it The Mincing Rascals, and we post it on my Facebook page, Rhyme King John. A memorable moment from you? You can call me right now, 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Started the hour with my fantasy Lollapalooza circa 1977, and this is the main.
When the rain washes you clean, you know.
I put Fleetwood Mac on my main stage, one of the two main stages. If you walk the if you go north, then you'd actually run into Stevie Wonder. I gave Rod Stewart one of the main stages. My buddy Eric said, I don't think so. He was probably going to put, I forget who he had on his main stage, but it wasn't going to be Rod Stewart.
I would put the Faces instead of Rod Stewart. But in 77, they weren't together. The Faces, his band before.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, look at you. Well, who's on your, do you have a Lollapalooza
I do.
Fantasy
Does it,
band list for me?
Yes.
Okay.
Elvis Costello and the Attractions.
Nice.
Little Feat.
Got it.
P-Funk. George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars. The Blasters, Howlin' Wolf.
You are so much hipper than me. Yeah. Keep going, yeah.
This one's not that hip, but he's great. Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
Oh, yeah. Well, how much fun would that be? I was thinking, I wonder if I should invite CSN or CSNY.
CSNY. They don't like each other so much anymore. But.
Yeah, but this was 1977, remember. So I could still do this. Keep going.
Peter Gabriel.
Uh-huh.
The Highwaymen, although they were all around. That was Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, and Johnny Cash. But they weren't a super group yet.
Didn't Willie Nelson just release another album? I'm pretty sure he
did. He released one. It was Gershwin music. It was number one on the jazz charts this spring.
This spring? So not that long ago. Okay,
not that
keep
long
going.
Ago. Pete Townsend solo. I've seen The Who a bunch of times, and they're great. Robert Palmer,
right.
The Faces, Talking Heads, Frank Zappa, and Chic.
Wow. How much fun would that be?
It's a little kind of all over the map, I guess.
Well, I think that could be your Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
I mean, who would be your two main stages, by the way?
Well, Todd Rundgren, I'm going to add him, too.
I saw the light. I love
that. Or Utopia, his band, is I like better live. So, yeah, the main stage, I think it will P-Funk.
Let's go back to the Mincing Rascals. At least I think that's what this call is about. Who are we talking to, Griff? Talk to me here, Griff. Who we got? Griff just cut out.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. So do we have a call?
We had a call from Ken. He just dropped out. But it was not about Mincing Rascals. It was about, he was saying the B-52s.
Yeah. You know, everybody gets to have their own fantasy Lollapalooza. Griff, you quit going to Lollapalooza, and I kind of feel bad about that. I think that's something you should be experiencing in your mid-20s, but you've kind of opted out.
I don't know. I feel like, if I went now, I'd feel like it was a lot of high schoolers. That's what I've heard from some people.
How do you think I feel?
Well,
I mean, I've been to Lollapalooza a couple times, and I'm like that cute older dad with a funny saying on a T-shirt who's trying to fit in but really knows he doesn't. So I was always trying to be invisible, which I was. But I was also trying to enjoy it, too. It's a weird set of emotions when you're in your 40s or 50s and you go to Lollapalooza.
I do know what you mean. You feel seen by so many people because you're just surrounded yes. at all times. But yeah. the bar is so high to be noticed there because there's such weird people at any music festival that
right,
don't
right.
worry about it. No one's really going to.
Yeah,
unless
they're
you're
not going to say, hey, look at that guy with sensible shoes and some silver in his hair. That's not going to bother them. But if you feel too old at 24.
No, I'm not saying that, but it's not necessarily like the quintessential mid-20s experience. I feel like I'm missing out. I did have a great time going. I'd probably go back someday, but the prices have gotten so much higher. And it does get to be a long weekend by the end of it. You're so tired.
Well, I do think if, particularly if you're buying your own tickets, you know, and maybe the teenagers don't, but the mid-20s do, that suddenly you do start to look at that a little differently and go, do I really love it 200? Because I love it, but I don't know if I love it out of my pocket. We'll pause here. Bob's going to update you on the news. The president quoted Teddy Roosevelt, which made me feel good because our TR show is coming. I want you to hear how President Obama did it and how Teddy Roosevelt did it. And we have to play the quote, balloons, 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 in the next half hour. And you'll understand why when we do. First, the news. That's coming up next here on WGN. I saw a T-shirt online today, and it had Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton, and you could like check the box that you wanted, but then the third option was a glass of wine, and that was the one checked, and there was a big red stain on the shirt because people just don't know who they want to love in this maybe election. And I understand that. That's why I'm so glad that Teddy Roosevelt is coming. I mean, the timing just couldn't be better. The conventions are over. We're all sort of sitting back trying to figure out what to do now. And here comes Teddy Roosevelt to the rescue. We welcome the return of TR, presented by Conasec and Dillon Trial Attorneys. And it's going to be this August 13th. I'm reading from some copy here. We wrote it a while ago. It's right around the corner now, isn't it? August 13th and a couple of Saturdays. 10 in the morning at the MAC. That's the Performing Arts Center at the College of DuPage. Kristen Decker, one of our producers for this show, sent a picture to me, and I think she may have posted it on my Facebook page. And it is of the crowd from last year, and it's just gigantic. It was sold out. We're about 60 seats from being sold out again this year. And I really want to sell it out because I want as many people as possible to experience this. We get better questions. It's louder. It's funner. And you can still get in. I interview the 26th president on stage for about 30, 40 minutes. And then you ask questions. So you can ask him about charging up San Juan Hill or what does he make of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton or anything else you want to. Tickets to the return of Teddy Roosevelt are on sale now. You know, you'll be in the balcony, but there's really no bad seats at the College of DuPage. Go to WGNradio.com/events. WGNradio.com/events. You should go right now because I don't know that they'll be there on Monday. It's presented by Conasec and Dillon Trial Attorneys and sponsored by Visit Springfield. And transportation is provided by O'Hare Midway Limousine. And I'm still not sure how we're going to do. Do you have one song for us, Bob Kessler, or are you going to do a number of songs for us?
I was planning on one.
Yeah.
We can talk about doing more if you like.
Bob has reminded
I know more
us.
Than one song, so there's... There's that.
Bob is an accomplished harmonica player. There is a song, there was a harmonica named after Teddy Roosevelt.
There was.
And
I think it's called the Our Teddy model.
And the John Philip Sousa marches were a big deal back then.
Yes.
And so you can do one of those songs in tribute to Kim.
I could do that.
I mean, that's the idea, right?
That's the idea.
So
I mean, that
know.
Was the popular, or some of the popular music of the day was John Philip Sousa marches. The wind bands were very popular, you know, concert band type of thing with, you know, basically an orchestra without strings. And so Sousa wrote a lot of stuff that was really popular. And
well, I'd love to. I've heard you play your harmonica before, and I think it would just be an additional treat if, as people were just nestling into their seats and getting ready, right at the top of the hour, you go on stage and then play a tribute to Teddy Roosevelt on the harmonica. We give you your nod and props. Then TR and I come out, and then we take some questions from the crowd.
Okay.
I think that would be an additional feature. So let's plan on that.
That'll sell that extra 60 ticket.
We're going to need to book a second show now because Bob Kessler's bringing his his harmonica. I'm looking forward to that, Bob. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for being part of the show. It's interesting. I want to play two sound bites for you. One was of President Barack Obama. He was obviously endorsing Hillary Clinton at the Democratic National Convention. And I was just pleased because here is his quote of TR.
She knows that sometimes during those 40 years, she's made mistakes, just like I have, just like we all do. That's what happens when we try. That's what happens when you're the kind of citizen Teddy Roosevelt once described. Not the timid souls who criticize from the sidelines, but someone who is actually in the arena, who strives valiantly, who errs, but who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement. Hillary Clinton is that woman in the arena. You've got to get in the arena with her, because democracy isn't a spectator sport. America isn't about, yes, he will. It's about, yes, we can. And we're going to...
And that's Barack Obama, obviously, whipping the crowd into a frenzy for Hillary Clinton. And my point here isn't about Hillary or Barack or Donald Trump. It's really about you, and it's about Teddy Roosevelt and how he said we all need to get in the arena. The critics don't count. And so I thought, oh, shoot, I know that Teddy Roosevelt, in one of our past performances, has actually addressed that very thing. Somebody asked him about it, and this is our TR on stage from a previous show at the College of DuPage.
Everything I believe is in this little utterance. I said this. It is not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or how the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred with dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes up short again and again, for there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows the great devotions, the great enthusiasms, and spends himself wholly in a worthy cause, and who at the best, if he should succeed, knows the triumph of high achievement. But at the worst, if he should fail, at least fails while daring greatly, and is not to be numbered amongst those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. I repeat, it is not the critic who counts. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred with dust and sweat and blood.
It's pretty good stuff, isn't it? 700 people just sitting on the edges of their seats. I think one of my favorite things about the Teddy Roosevelt, and for that matter, the Thomas Jefferson shows, Thomas Jefferson will be on stage with me before you in November. How about that? At the College of DuPage. But one of my favorite things is sometimes when there's a pause and nobody is saying anything. Everybody's just leaning in, waiting for the next word from the two presidents that we feature, Teddy Roosevelt, in 2 weeks, and tickets available at WGNradio.com/events. So that's a little bit of that. Wisdom from the 26th president. One last point. I just want to play something for you that I think is really funny. And it came up when we were talking about the conventions, and a friend of mine, when she went back and looked at some of the great moments in convention history, Republicans and Democrats, they note the balloon fail of the 1980 Democratic National Convention. And I said, well, I remember that. And I went to get the audio of that, but it wasn't 1980. It was 2004. And then, as it turns out, there's a whole stream of balloon fails on the Internet. If you go to YouTube, you'll find them. But I'll play a clip for you from the one I remember. It's 2004, John Kerry and John Edwards. Imagine John Edwards being the vice president or president someday. So those two guys have just won the nomination. And it's the same scene you saw the last 2 weeks, where the families are on stage and you have this sea of balloons and the kids are now coming up and everybody's cheering and the crowd is cheering and the camera goes from the crowd to the stage to the crowd. crowd. But always in this image, you have the sea of red, white, and starred balloons and confetti. And that's the moment. That's the big payoff of the whole thing. And in 1980, it didn't go as well as it was supposed to. And it didn't in 2004 either, when Edwards and Kerry were the nominees. And the more notable point about this in 2004 was, if you were watching it on CNN, as I was that night, I mean, I remember this specifically, the director was talking to the technical crew, and they're trying to coordinate with the last words on stage, the drop of the balloons and the release of the confetti. So that's the scene. And the only other thing you need to know is that while I'll play this little clip for you, you see one thing on the screen coming down, and that is confetti. The balloons are just kind of hanging around up high.
Go balloons! Stand by confetti! Keep coming, balloons! More balloons! Bring them! Balloons! 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 More balloons! Tons of them! Bring them down!
No balloons. He's getting no balloons. Kerry's waving. Crowd's cheering.
No confetti. No confetti. He's
getting confetti.
All right, go balloons. Go balloons. We need more balloons. All balloons. All balloons should be going. Come on, guys. Let's move it.
So weird to hear this. I'm thinking, what am I hearing?
We need more balloons.
Yeah, you do.
I want all balloons to go. God. Yes.
We edited that.
Go confetti. Go confetti. I want more balloons.
If you just joined us, he wants more balloons. And he did not get the ball.
It doesn't seem like it's a high-tech thing. It's basically not a trapdoor on a rope, maybe.
This, I know, really. I think we did something like this at junior prom. I don't think it's that hard. Part of his problem was that the balloons, I think, had been released. But, you know, they're released from the top of, like, the Wells Fargo Arena, you know, someplace like that, the United Center. So by the time they get down, they've missed their moment. This actually happened to Hillary Clinton at the end of her speech when the balloons are supposed to come down. They took their time. A little updraft kind of throws them into the air. And then ultimately, you have so many balloons. It's this sea of fun balloons, and it looks like fun, but it's completely covered the stage and then the front row there. And you're almost worried that Bill and Hillary Clinton, who aren't young, not knowing exactly where the floor and the balloons are, might just tumble right off into the orchestra pit. It was perilous. It's just comical. The timing of the balloons didn't work this year as well as they should have, but maybe not as badly as it went for the DNC in 2004. And by the way, if I may just say one other thing, Bob, if one porpoise dies as a result of the release of those balloons, then I'm off the ticket. All right, there's a couple of other things I want to get to, including why a story about the Chicago Blackhawks today. Did you see this? I'll give you a little fun piece there. And the latest from the pop culture scene all coming up on WGN. One other soundbite to play for you here, and that is just this funny little note to me. I had a conversation this week with the publisher of a publication called Let's Play Hockey, in part because the Minnesota Wild, and I have a lot of friends who are big Minnesota Wild fans, is thinking about changing the song they play when the team scores a goal. Currently, when someone scores a goal, they play that. That sounds like a hockey goal song. Everybody's up and jamming and cheering, right? What do you guess the song is? Griff, do you care to jump in here? What do you think they would in Minnesota change it to if they didn't play that song? What would be a really good song that Minnesotans would enjoy hearing when the Wild scores a goal? Nothing comes to mind. Okay, how about this?
Go, go crazy. Let's get nuts.
Okay, so that's the debate, and that kind of works. That'd be fun. Everybody, let's go crazy. So then I started to think, well, what are the songs that other teams play when they score a goal? If you're in Detroit,
hey, hockey down. Not alone, just look around.
Hey, hockey down.
Let's hear the sound.
I could see that. That works. Hey, hey, Hockey Town. If you are at a New York Rangers game, you would hear... But props to the Chicago Blackhawks, because I'm talking to this guy, and he says, but you know, at the end of the day, nobody puts on a more entertaining program in all of sports than the Chicago Blackhawks. He mentioned Jim Cornelison when he sings the national anthem, the video montage beforehand, and he said, and when the Blackhawks score a goal, and he said, and Lord, they score a lot of goals, everybody knows. Boy, that sure works, doesn't it? That's just part of the package. Okay, Griff, you've got something for us, and that is a piece from AV Club, right?
The best pop culture of 2016 so far. Now, it jumped out at me for one reason, relating to your first half hour of the show.
My Lollapalooza fantasy set list.
Right. And you included the Monkees on one of those stages.
Yeah.
Which seemed to me, and to some of us here in the other room, a little surprising.
Why?
I don't know.
It would be a side stage.
Okay.
You know, they're not opening up for Fleetwood Mac, but okay. So I don't have to get too defensive about that. Keep going.
Hey, no, it's your stage.
It's my fantasy Lollapalooza, right?
But then I was proven to be completely out of touch because one of the writers, so they had, like, all of their writers pick their favorite piece of pop culture from the year so far.
Okay.
One of them is the Monkees' new album, which came out this year, and I completely forgot about, called Good Times. Did you know that they even had one?
I just saw not that long ago them something about them. Maybe that was the connection, huh?
They've How many Monkees do they have? I mean, well, Davy Jones Davey's is deceased,
gone.
And Mike Nesmith is not always part of it. So
no, but I think he is now. So I wonder what those songs sound like. We'll have to go find and sample those next week, Griff.
I think we will. But so I was happy to see that.
Thank you. A little validation never hurt anybody.
And then there's a lot of other stuff that we've talked about on the show already.
For instance?
The Lobster has made a number of appearances on our show so far. You still haven't seen it.
The Lobsters?
The Lobster. The movie The Lobster. Your favorite movie.
Oh, my gosh, that's right.
It's been playing at the neighborhood theater by me, and I've been meaning to go see it.
I know. I support a lot of things that I actually don't support.
I have to tell you the name of your favorite movie. That's where we're at. To explain
For those who don't know the Lobster story, Griff, and you're better at this than I am, what's the Lobster story?
Yeah, we're getting good at it here. We've done it a few times now. Some future world starring Colin Farrell where he lives, and if you don't get married or if you are uncoupled,
yeah,
they will take you, put you in a hotel, and you have to get married in 40 days to the other people that are there. If you don't, you'll be turned into an animal. He wants to be turned into
home anyway.
Yeah. So you're turned into an animal of your choosing, and he says, well, I'd like to be turned into a lobster. And she says, that's a fine choice. No judgment there. It's very funny. I got to go see that movie. It's my favorite movie of the year, and I haven't seen it yet.
And you actually forgot the title, too. That's a new level.
It's rediscovery. I like to think I'm consistent. I like it all over again.
It was fun to go through. It's other stuff we've talked about. The People versus O.J. Simpson was somebody's favorite thing of the year so far.
Yeah.
Sing Street, a movie we talked a little bit about.
Yeah, sure.
And, yeah, just a couple other things. But, yeah, those were the two that stuck out to me.
Kind of resonated. Well, because some of those we've also, I think, talked about on our Vibe Score segment.
Right, yeah.
And that's right around the corner, too. So let's do this. Bob, you get ready to do the news. Afterwards, our Vibe Score segment is kind of like that, all things pop culture and then some. We feed you the news, and you get to score it, and then we'll visit with the boys from the beat. I'm John, and this is WGN. I do my hair.
Lizzo.
Hey there.
Are you there?
Yes, I am now.
Okay.
Did I miss my radio show?
Yeah, you missed a lot of it, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was upstairs vibing.
Well, you don't get to vibe on this one, I guess, because you missed Good as Hell by Lizzo.
Griff, you almost had your own radio show.
I was ready to. I was going to start.
I've got your back, Griff. I could co-host it with you.
I know. Yeah, we got Kristen here finally. It's been a couple weeks.
I know. I'm sorry, but I'm back.
No. It's good
and
to have
you
back.
I'm full of opinions on Vibe Score.
So did you say this is the Vibe Score segment? It's an app that was developed by a man named Tom Hegberg in the Chicago area. He's my cousin. He and I said, okay, here's stories that are of interest to you, videos, pictures, viral things. And after you get a chance to see it, then we ask you a scorable question. You get to score the news this way. And we always start the Vibe Score segment with a song each week. So, Griff, that's the song there. Play it again. Some of us weren't able to hear the whole thing. No, that's okay.
Yeah.
So,
and by the way, I did say all that, so you just repeated it. Now
oh,
it's.
Now
I'm
I
just kidding.
Feel really bad. I was.
You're
going to
be replaced,
so involved
John.
In
You're
something.
Be replaced.
Yeah. You ever get so involved in something you sort of forget? Oh, wait, I'm also supposed to be. It's a good thing I'm not a bus driver, pilot, brain surgeon, something like that. Okay, so what are we getting on this one, Griff?
So it's, again, Good as Hell by Lizzo. It's a song from the Barbershop The Next Cut soundtrack, which came out a little while ago, but it's just sort of rolling out now. It's definitely not a big hit on the radio. It's an mm-hmm. unlikely candidate. But some people, I've seen, it's like their own personal song of summer, and I think it's really fun.
What did you give it?
I gave it a 87 or something. Kristen?
I gave it a 95 because it talks about, like, flipping your hair back and showing your nails so you can really get into it. It's like a female song of summer.
The sort of things you would do while you're taking a selfie or something like that.
Or a video, Instagram,
and
Snapchat.
And I've seen a lot of selfies of Kristen at Lollapalooza and other places. So
we'll get to
Lala today.
We'll get to Lala.
Is Bob there? Bob, are you...
I'm here, and I like that one. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that was a little better, right?
It's not gym music. That's what I call music that I dismiss.
Yes.
It's just music I'd hear at the locker room at the gym and be like,
yeah.
That one, yeah, I give it in the 70s.
There you
wow,
go.
Wow, that's huge. Those of you keeping score at home, that's huge. Okay, what's next, Griff?
Well, speaking of Kristen's trip to Lollapalooza, in the Chicago category, we put that Lollapalooza is back in Grant Park this weekend. Headliners include Radiohead, Red Hot Chili Peppers, J. Cole, LCD Sound System, Future, ton more. One-day tickets cost, is this about right, around $150?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so are you there? We asked the people. And what do you think? Kristen, you were there?
Yes, there yesterday. Also going to be there tomorrow. I give Lala a 97. It's my favorite weekend of the year.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I can't vote on this one. I didn't go this year, but
get
to...
But
you've
have been
to Lala, and I have pictures with you at Lala in years past.
I know.
What's your... thought for the whole festival.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally on board. I think it's a great thing for Chicago. I love how it's grown. Some people don't like where it's gone, but I think it's terrific. So I'm going to vibe. Well, if you guys will let me vibe on Lollapalooza, I'm going to give it a 90, Griff. I'll vibe a 90.
Now it's getting an 87. Bob, bring us down.
70-something. I love that people have fun with it. And
oh, man.
Therefore...
It makes other people happy.
There you go.
Good.
He's being very diplomatic on the radio.
I know. This is the new Bob. He's positively bright and cheery. Okay, what's next, Griff?
In the books category, Harry Potter returns to bookstores this weekend with an event release of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Now, it's the script of a play written by Jack Thorne, not J.K. Rowling, unless it's one of her many pen names. I don't think it is.
Yeah.
The play is currently running in London, and then so they're releasing the script. So it's not exactly a book, but anyway, are you excited? Does this mean anything to you, or should it be done? What's your score?
Well, it is a franchise; they don't want to quit, isn't it? But there's probably Harry Potter fans out there that'll scarf it up just because it's part of the franchise.
I think so. Yeah,
it feels that way.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
People are camped out, I think, this weekend at bookstores like they used to.
But this is the script of the play.
No, yeah, it's not exactly another, you know, book.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. So I feel a little weird about it. I was a huge Harry Potter fan. I still am. I still love it.
Well, how stoked are you for this?
I think I might actually get it. I'm not that I'm like 75. But I'm not going to be camped out or anything. Kristen, yeah. you don't care.
Yeah, no, that's my cultural blind spot. Never read or got into Harry Potter, so
That's a good way to put it for me, too. Yeah. Cultural blind spot. Never read a word of it. So I'm not even going to vibe on this one, Griff. You're going to carry the day, at least in the room.
That's fine. Okay. Well, I gave it like a 75. It's getting a 61. A lot of people, I think, might be a little tired of it. It happens.
Yeah, no, that's okay. No shame in that. It was a good run.
Exactly. Okay, in the movies category, Jason Bourne is back in theaters. It's the return of many great fictional men. So Jason Bourne's back in theaters this weekend, and in the appropriately titled Jason Bourne, Matt Damon stars as the silent, mysterious rogue assassin.
I like that description.
What do you think of this? Are you excited? Do you like these movies?
I know
you've seen these.
Yes, 100. This is awesome. I don't know. Maybe this will be the one we go, wow, they stayed too long. But so far, so good. I'm very excited about this.
I give it an 88, and I usually don't go for action movies. I like to think I'm a little more refined in my movie watching, like documentaries and whatever. But the Bourne series delivers. They're entertaining, and so I'm pumped for this new one.
And it's important to clarify, I asked, what do you think of the series, not this new one, because nobody's seen it yet.
Yeah. The series is great, so I'm sure this new one will be just as good as the rest.
We're in line. We're pumped.
Right.
Plus, one of my favorite things in the world is Griffin imitating Jason Bourne doing a fast walk.
I have done that, yeah. Well, because he just walks. He never wants to reveal himself as, you know, being on the run. So he just walks really fast and really serious.
Very purposefully, very seriously. And you can't even imagine what it is I'm talking about until you see Griffin do it.
I feel a video for Facebook coming on, or the web.
It's like I just blew up a building, but don't worry about me as I'm walking away. And it's very fast and serious and noncommittal.
I think we can leave that to the imagination. Let's not. It's getting a 92, and I'm around there. I love the Bourne movies.
92, that's very high for a vibe score.
The reviews, this new one, very mixed. It's like 50 on Rotten Tomatoes, which was
really
deeply discouraging, but we'll see.
All right.
I might have to check it out anyway. Okay, in the fashion category, we give you a look at what the U.S. Olympic team will be wearing when they march to the opening ceremony in Rio.
Yeah.
Do you like the look?
I love the look. I gave it a 92. There have been years past where I feel like the U.S. have really missed in the fashion category, where I look at their outfits and think, I think doesn't Ralph Lauren or Tommy, one of the designers designs
Ralph Lauren.
And usually it doesn't look like what Ralph Lauren would design. But this year, nailed it. Crisp, clean, not too in your face. Very, I love it.
But a sizable polo logo, right?
Yeah. Yes, thank you for that. That was my problem with it, Bob. Bob, what are you going to give it?
I just Googled it. I'm seeing that. Are they wearing the button-down shirts? Is that what they're wearing?
Well, they have a bunch of different shirts or outfits they wear depending on it. But for the opening ceremony, they're wearing white slacks, a blue blazer, and with a great big polo patch on the left breast pocket.
Well, if you took off the polo patch, they would look like Patrick McGoohan in The Prisoner, I think.
Well, there's that. And then they have like a little red in the shirt underneath. But to me, it looks like more for him than for us. I don't know. To me, Kristen is kind of dull and not American enough. So I give it a very low score.
Oh, I feel like we're on the world stage. We don't always need to be in your face. Sometimes it's better just to be subtle.
You're either with us or against us, Decker. What is it? Are you an American or not?
I'm an American, a classy one.
I gave it a 70. Yeah. My wife gave it a 75. There's Decker's 90. Wow.
The polo logo is huge. I'm looking at the Blazers.
I'm telling you, six inches tall. Are we playing for the United States of polo? No, it's the United States of America.
Your scores are always so fine, though. You talk about it for a minute and it sounds so negative, and then you come through with the 70.
Yeah. I would have scored it a 40 if I were you.
Commit.
With that hatred.
Okay, I'll change it, okay? Are you happy?
Bully you into changing all your scores. It's getting a 79.
Okay.
People like it. I don't know. Although, then again, 79. Maybe they hate it. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
according to your 70, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, give me another one, Griff.
All right. In the food and drink category, we hinted at some maybe healthier options on the food and drink category because it was mostly Burger King novelties for a while there. So we put up a recipe to a summer salad, and you tried it.
I did.
Wait, so talk us through this. What's on there?
It's a Spanish chopped salad. So red onions, cucumbers, tomatoes, a really good dressing. It doesn't have avocado in there, but you could put chicken in there if you want. There's a little cheese. I don't remember if there was a corn in it. The recipe's there. It's beautiful looking. I'm telling you, this is a great summer Spanish chopped salad. It had some Kalamata olives. Oh, man, was this good. Was that a different salad? Anyway, the ingredients are there, but it was really delicious. And so here's the idea. If you're looking for a neat recipe to try, try this recipe and then vibe it. We'd love to have other people score the salad. We'll put another one up this weekend so you'll have more to choose from.
I gave it a 75. I didn't actually make it, but I looked at all the ingredients, and I was like, I would totally eat that. It looks great. Manchego cheese. Anytime you put that in a salad, yes. I'm sold.
Yeah, I know. That's really good cheese. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah, it's yummy, Griff. Okay, what's next?
I look forward to it. In the TV category, Jordan and Robbie are the last remaining bachelors on The Bachelorette.
Yeah.
How entertaining has this season been? Have you been watching?
I have not been. I gave it a 17. It's the worst. It's bad for America. We have to stop this thing.
Kristen.
I ebb and flow with The Bachelor, Bachelorette. One season I'll be all in it. I'll be can't miss an episode. Just love to make fun of it. And then the next season I'm like, I don't even want to waste my time.
Aaron Rodgers' brother was one of the Bachelors.
Oh, he's Jordan. He's still
one of the final two?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh,
that's okay. I've also seen a decent amount.
He's a gold digger.
Evidently.
I've seen a decent amount of this season also, and so I'll betray that now. But he's been so clearly going to win all season that it's kind of boring. You know that Aaron Rodgers' brother is going to win.
So do you think?
Although apparently he is not getting along with Aaron Rodgers, go figure.
Yeah.
Who's probably just super embarrassed by the whole thing.
He is. That was the thing. Aaron finally was on a radio station in Milwaukee, and they finally got him to talk about it. And he said, you could tell there was this big rift. And so the zinger was, he says, I don't want to talk about family matters. I wish him well in the competition.
I loved him calling it the competition. Made me laugh really hard.
I wish him well in the competition.
One competes for the Super Bowl. The other one competes for the Bachelorette.
They're both sportsmen. I watch it with a group of friends, but we've had a really hard time all getting together every week. Like, schedules keep interrupting. So,
yeah.
And I can't watch it alone. There's just no way.
Oh, really? That's lame.
It's so
that's weak.
It's so no. It's so boring alone. When you're with people, you just laugh at the.
Yeah.
It's way more fun. So
definitely make fun of it.
So that's the way I feel about. Yeah. Go ahead, Griff.
No, I'm just now way behind. But so this was a little bit of a spoiler for me. But here, that's all good.
That's the way I feel about Sharknado. It's more fun if you watch it with friends, and I don't have any friends that will watch that with me. So. I really haven't seen it yet.
Maybe we'll put that up when it
Oh, yeah, we got to do Sharknado because it debuts tomorrow night.
We'll be there.
Okay. Anything else before we wrap this up?
No, I think that about does it. Now, I just saw a viral video of Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving on the plane to the Olympics, I guess. And they were singing 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton.
I have got to look that up.
And Carmelo Anthony is looking on just very distressed by the whole thing.
It's in the viral section of Vibes.
Yeah, right. It's pretty funny. It will be momentarily.
Okay.
So maybe we'll look into that next week.
I just want to mention this. We posted the speeches as they gave them throughout the week. And here's how they broke down. Hillary Clinton's speech got a 76 on Vibes score. Bill Clinton got an 85, and a lot of people voted. And usually, if a lot of people vote, it tends to pull it down. Michelle Obama's speech, 94,
yes.
Which was off the charts huge. So congratulations to Michelle.
She deserves a mic drop.
That's our Vibe Score segment. Vibe Score is one word, VibeScore. It's a free app you can get. We will feed you the news. You score the news, and we review it here on Saturdays on WGN. The boys from the beat talk sports. Nice to hear you, Kristen Decker. Thanks for popping in.
Thanks for having me.
Visiting with us on our Vibe Score segment. We'll talk sports briefly with the guys next. I don't know if Mark Carmson is still. Hogue is there too. And Mark Carmen. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hello, John. How are you, sir?
Good. You know how you sometimes see a headline or something scroll across on your page and you go, I'm going to click on that, but it's never as good when you click through as you thought it was going to be?
It's my life. You summed it up right there.
Basically, everything I've ever written.
That's not true.
It was watch umpire push Javi Baez out of the way. or push Javi Baez. And I thought, oh my God, what happened? Did he get in a fight with the ump, or what are you doing? And then I clicked through, and it was kind of a funny scene, but it wasn't as dramatic as the headline made it sound.
Yeah, well, sometimes life lets you down, John, and you know who's not letting you down along those lines is Javi Baez, because he is just adorable. I don't know if you're following Javi Baez and how cute he is, but the confidence of Javi Baez just seems to grow day by day, and he's doing a great job playing second base, hitting cleanup today. Cubs and the Mariners in a nothing-nothing middle seven extravaganza at Wrigley.
And it's funny because he was doing what players don't normally do anymore, at least by my estimation. He had crossed home plate. I forget who was coming up behind him, but another runner was about to try and score. And he quickly turned after he scored and then was signaling to them to slide left. As he was doing that, the umpire couldn't see as a result, and he just shoved him out of the way so that the ump could get a better look at it. It was kind of funny, actually.
Well, good. I mean, the umpires need the best look. I liked when, did you guys see when Deonner Navarro stood in front of Anthony Rizzo the other day?
No.
Right in front of the plate when Rizzo was trying to come up to bat, and Rizzo just kind of stood there for a second, and then he shoved Navarro out of the way.
What was that all about?
Well, they're friends, I think.
He took out Navarro had his batting gloves in his back pocket. He removed the batting gloves, threw them onto the dirt. So now the guy's not paying attention to what's going on. He's got to bend down, pick up his gloves. They're laughing about it. I was wondering if kind of the old school baseball fans, John, were going to be, they see this is too much camaraderie.
Right, I know.
You know?
I know, yeah. Some people don't like that they're pals and say hello to each other. I don't know, 162 games, it's probably too long a season to not be nice to each other a little bit. I could see how in the NFL you don't want them, loving too much. But baseball, I think that's part of the charm of the game.
And I'm watching your Eric Cooper getting Javi Baez out of the way. It's kind of aggressive.
I know, he was ticked. Well, because he's the one that's going to, everybody's going to YouTube or second guess his, call of that play. The other thing they don't do that they should do more often, Carm, to me, is pick up the bat. Have you ever seen the runner that scored grab the bat? A lot of times that's in the way, too.
That's a very good point. It's about self-awareness in life, right, John? I mean, if you're scoring and there's a bat there and your teammate's going to be coming down after you, it's not all about you, man. Think about the next guy in the dugout.
Well, you can call me Grandpa after I say this one, then, because I was watching the Twins play the White Sox, and Miguel Sano.
Sorry about that.
Completely runs through a stop sign at third base. I mean, it was like, stop, do not go any further, you're fat. And he rounds third base and just barrels on into home. And it wasn't even close. He didn't even slide. It was such a matter-of-fact tag out that that was one of the reasons the game went into extra innings. And I just think, I don't know if fining players would work or how you get them to obey the coach at third base, but it doesn't seem to happen very often.
Well, to rebut what you're saying, not that I would ever want to do that, John.
Yeah.
There's a manager of the Cubs, Joe Maddon, who was speaking about this earlier in the week, where he thinks that if the player can actually see the baseball, he shouldn't rely on the coach. Like, it's too much to pick up the coach and figure out what the coach wants him to do and see the bag,
Really?
Yeah, if it's in front of you, and, I mean, you should, I mean, if you're doing your homework and you know who's got a good arm, you should not have to rely on your coach unless you can't see what's going on. I thought that was interesting.
Or unless you're dumb. I mean, some guys just make bad decisions out there, too.
Well, wow. Right. Like when Tim Anderson the other night, he was getting the stop sign. He came around third, but he saw that the cutoff was going to be short hopped, and then he picked it back up and scored.
He should have been sent, period.
That was an awful stop sign to begin with, but he did have the play in front of him, was able to see it, and as soon as he saw that the cutoff man was going to have to pick up the ball in the short hop, he went home and ended up scoring.
And by the way, the biggest weakness on the Chicago Cubs is actually their third base coach, Gary Jones, who is absolutely horrendous.
Oh, really? Are you kidding?
He is brutal.
Oh, my gosh.
First of all, he sent – It was his last start of the start before that. He waves around Jake Arrieta on a close play at the plate. Arrieta sliding in on his shoulder.
Oh, don't do that.
What are you doing, man? Like, you have one job. You don't send the pitcher if it's Jake Arrieta. You want to send Jaime Navarro back in the day or pick a bad Cubs starter. Go ahead. You don't do that with Jake Arrieta.
He should have like a red jersey or blazer on so you know this stop. This is the guy that does not round bases for us. Yeah. Okay, I got to wrap this up, guys. Anything else you want to point out that you're going to be talking about after the news?
Well, training camp has begun, and I just rushed back up I-57 to get to the studio. Plenty of sound from players, Zach Miller, Eddie Goldman, Ryan Pace, the general manager, talked today. So got plenty of Bears sound and talk coming up in the next 4 hours.
We're looking forward to it. Have a great show, fellas.
Thank you, John.
The boys from The Beat up next on WGN.